The following program has been furnished and paid for by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSCB and KGBC are not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could join us once again, and we look forward to a news-packed show today. A lot going on, especially in the national news. Before we get started, I want to remind you that just as with all of the shows that we undertake here on KSCB and other stations around the country, just because you hear us discuss certain topics that may be of interest to you, please don't take any action involving financial, legal, investment, or otherwise without checking with your existing investment advisors. And, you know, if you don't have investment advisors that opine in each of those areas, tax, accounting, legal, real estate, etc., feel free to go to our website at beaplanner.com, and you can go to the forms link, second link from the right, the top of the page. And if you'll go to that page, first step, first form is client profile. By completing that, we'll have enough information to have a phone call with you and discuss if or how we might be able to assist with you meeting your current or future investment goals and objectives. And by the way, most of the people that we work with or that find us are behind on their retirement savings. And, you know, you may ask, well, how do I know? Well, depends on where you want to live. And, you know, you could change that, and that would change your calculus, and it's not quite as complicated as calculus. Calculus at least deals with, I believe you could say, the known, although I was never a good calculus student. I barely scratched the surface with whatever the minimum curriculum was, both in high school and college. In fact, I don't think I had to take any in high school, but it was not one of my favorite classes, I can tell you that. And I was never so happy than to grab the, I believe it was the sixth highest grade in the class on that summer session. And we had a Chinese teaching assistant teach the class, and nothing against the Chinese. Are incredibly accomplished intellectuals, much more so than I am. But I tell you what, it is difficult to learn when you can't understand what's being spoken, much less what's being taught. But in any event, you know, we would tell you that, first of all, everyone's target's a little bit different. Obviously, there's many factors that go into lifestyle choices, you know, aspirational spending that you may have for your loved ones, kids, grandkids, etc. Medical, planned and unplanned. You can just go down the list. I mean, there are a myriad of decision points to get to that number. But when I said that you might be able to change it, I was referring specifically to where you decide to domicile during retirement. And, you know, in my case and many other American cases, and it's more every day Southeast Asia has become a destination of choice. And, you know, I happen, as many of you know, I happen to be in Thailand most of the time. The city of Bangkok, it is a great spot to be if you're American or not. You know, it's a melting pot of nationalities are here, but there are a lot of Americans, and it's not just the ones that served in the Vietnam War that used to R&R to various cities here in Thailand. That's certainly a reason, and I guess it was a memory for many of them, but boy, I've run into a lot of those guys, and now's the time that all of, I guess we're a little bit past the big wave, but there's still a lot of those guys around, guys and gals, I suspect. But in any event, you know, you can appreciate the lower cost of living compared to America in many of the Southeast Asian countries, whether it's Vietnam or Philippines or Malaysia, maybe even Indonesia. They've all got their strengths and weaknesses, and as one who's done significant research on the various choices, I'm going to tell you, Bangkok checks almost all the boxes on my list, and I would suggest to you the lower cost, you know, 35% to 40% of what you might spend in America, maybe as much as 50% less if you're, I'm sorry, I said that backwards, 35% to 40% of what you would spend. So we're talking 65% off of the amount you might spend in America. And maybe if you're from New York or LA, it's even higher. It's a significant cost savings, even in spite of the fact that the cost of living in Bangkok, as an example, has gone up in the recent past. And, you know, it's gone up, but you're still working from such a low baseline, it's still much, much less than what you would spend in the U.S. And that's not even the half of it. If it was only a cost issue, that'd be one thing. But no, it's also it'll be an upsize or improvement, upgrade, if you will, in the quality of life that you'll get for that lower, reduced costs. And, you know, it hits on all cylinders, almost all cylinders. I keep saying almost. If you're a family with young children that you've still got to put through high school, you know, that's the only area that it gets real expensive to pay for those international programs. But again, I had that issue with my son. We have a 16-year-old son here, and you know, we found a program that was more akin to what you would pay for a junior college than a university. And I'm telling you, that's what those programs go for. And just as an example, our embassy kids, or the children of folks that work at the U.S. Embassy here in Bangkok, at least, they go to a school that's part of the American school system, and it's approximately $40,000 per year. That's elementary school up through high school. And of course, you know, that's the bill for that's footed by you and I, but you know, I can tell you, you know, they are more so than a senator or a congressman. I it makes me want to throw up every time I hear a senator or a congressman talk about how, you know, they've given this many years of service to their country. I don't want to hear it. I mean, show me one that hasn't made a lot more money when they leave office than when they're in office, and then tell me that they've given service to their country. They make it sound like it's part of, like, being in the military. It's like, give me a break. But in any event, let's see. We were getting ready to discuss. I've got several articles that I wanted to pull up. One, I don't have it in front of me, but I can almost recite it. And you may, if you had tuned in a week ago, you heard us discussing the concept of concessions in the current leasing market. And, you know, we've got a scenario right now where a lot of the major, at least the Texas markets, because I was just looking at that on the show last week, concessions have, in some sub-markets within the city of Dallas or Houston or Austin, concessions are 10% or more. And that's, you know, that's a big number. And, you know, I come back to their comments after comment from prospective tenants about how, you know, a month's free rent is something they pay attention to. It's like, that would be awesome. You know, if we can get a month's free rent, you know, we're definitely interested in that property, which, you know, that's, I know it doesn't sound like it being just a huge amount of money, but, you know, if you're a, you know, 300 unit apartment building, and I know they wouldn't necessarily be empty all at one time, unless you did a significant renovation and, you know, basically empty the property to do it, which most people won't do that if the property is laid out in a certain fashion that allows it to stay partially open. I know when I was in the U.S. last, I think it was back in February, that I took a drive over to Lockhart to look at a project that some of our clients are invested in, new build, or part of it's new build, 140 units out of the 280, I believe, or 282, and they very neatly had those buildings cordoned off where they could rent. They were pretty much, it appeared, they were finishing buildings of, you know, X number of units. I'm not sure how many were broken up into a separate standalone building. But they had some of those units occupied, or so it appeared, and still working on others. So, you know, you wouldn't typically see some, unless it was just a bombed-out hulk when they bought it, which, you know, some of the old Class Ds, C-minuses could be. You're never going to just, you know, turn everybody out. But let's assume, I mean, the income effect would still be the same if you're renting a unit of C, you know, a C-class unit for $1,250 a month. That may be a little high. It depends on which city and submarket we're talking about. Times 300, that's $375,000. That's a chunk of cash flow. I don't care how you slice it. And so, you know, that's a significant giveaway to attract a tenant. And I know tenants probably don't think through it like that, but if you're on the other side of that fence, you know, you begin to understand where the dollars slip through the cracks. I mean, it's not just there, it's utilities, if you're paying for utilities, even the common area utilities that you're paying for can be significant. But anyway, you know, we've talked about in the past, and since we're talking about the revenue stream, and then obviously the revenue is the top of the P&L page, the net income's at the bottom. You know, that $375,000 directly affects your property's NOI, or net operating income, for the year. And I understand that, you know, some lenders are going to add that back. They're going to normalize NOI, or certainly a borrower will seek to do that, whether or not the lender allows it. But they're trying to gauge, well, what's the NOI potential moving forward so that the borrower can pay that loan back. But and then, of course, if you're the seller, you're really going to fight hard to add that piece of, not actual NOI, but it's depending on how full you've gotten since you did the promotion, since you were giving away the concession, it does translate to real NOI. But as you recall, if you've been listening to the show, the way we make money in the multifamily market versus single family is directly related to the net operating income. It's not what your apartment owner down the street sold their building for a month ago or 3 months ago. Now, I'm not saying it's never going to be considered. It is certainly considered, but it's more of a rule of thumb or a sanity check for a lender to look at comparable properties. And so typically it's the rate at which the lender or a buyer is going to capitalize the earnings at what they are seeking to make as a return on their investment, and the NOI. So cap rate NOI, that's going to produce a valuation from which an offer will be made. And cap rates, went way up in the last two and a half years. They're not coming down nearly as fast, which means the values are not going up as fast as we would all like. But at least they're trending in the right direction, just very slowly. So, but in any event, and I just touched on briefly the fact that we make money with multifamily based on net operating income. With single family, we make money based on the sales price as a comparable or a comp to what your neighbors may have sold their house for earlier. And that's typically going to be the variable that constrains your sales price unless you've got something really special, some type of niche asset, which they are out there. In fact, I mentioned, I believe last week or week before, we've been selling some of our 108-year-old condos in King William Historic District, part of San Antonio's Southtown area. And, I've had several discussions with realtors that just don't understand, how to value vintage assets. And, I'm not sitting here talking about it. We've actually got closings at prices that are insane, but nonetheless, there were people that perceived the value in those properties, and that's who I want to sell to. I'm not looking to sell to someone that thinks it's, too high of a price. If it is, go buy something somewhere else that's not in the most desirable neighborhood in all of San Antonio, and take what you get for that. And I mean the price and value are two different concepts, and the same scenario or valuation process might be applied. It's applied to everything in life. Think about buying a car. Some people see value in the Toyota, like moi. I love Toyota. Others see a higher value, and not I'm not talking about price yet, higher value in the Mercedes. Why do Mercedes sell every day in the cities that those dealerships exist? And you could argue, they're too expensive. Well, not to people that perceive value in that brand for whatever reason, whether it's a materialistic thing or it's a fact that, most of those cars live longer, if you want to use that term, than others. you know, there's a lot that goes into that brand and ergo the value that one's willing to pay. And that's true whether it's clothing, whether it's food, whether it's housing. You can go down the list. There's always options that reflect a higher value that people are willing to pay for. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and take our first break. We will return momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control.
Okay, welcome back to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we were just discussing the concept of how important concessions have become in the current market. And, you know, I mean, concessions is just one issue. I mean, when you look at the significant unit count that was delivered to the market over the last couple years and the relative low absorption rates in most major U.S. cities, that's a bad combination. And then, you know, if you're an existing apartment owner, having to deal with the onslaught of these concessions is just, you know, it's more than a double whammy. You've also got property taxes that have skyrocketed, insurance costs that are continuing to skyrocket, and it's not just in the hurricane markets, it's elsewhere as well, and it's really become a difficult consideration when you're looking to buy a property. I mean, how much elasticity do you allow in some of these costs? Upward elasticity. And you know, I'll tell you, it's going to be a long time before insurance retreats and property taxes. I'm trying to think if there's ever been a retreat. I don't remember it. If there was, there probably, well, I don't know. I shouldn't say there probably was. There may have been. Let's put it that way. But in any event, I just, you know, it's another reason to consider small apartment properties these days. I've been talking about it quite a bit as of late. You know, you've got, you know, a whole bunch. I mean, I think the NAA suggests there's several hundred thousand, maybe as many as half a million small apartment properties around the U.S. And we're talking, I think, probably the definition the lenders use, which is anything that's over four units, is considered multifamily. I know some lenders consider four units to be multifamily, but I would suggest to you say an 8 to 20 unit apartment building is something that some investors, without being necessarily multi millionaire, certainly not at the level of what we would call the mass affluent, can qualify for those properties. And even if you say, well, you know, I don't want to own something solely by myself. Well, I get that. I kind of like that, actually. And I would tell you that joining with three or four other people to purchase that 20-unit building makes a lot of sense. And I know from experience, I've got an 8-unit in San Antonio that I've got one partner in. And, you know, that's about the right size for us. Now, we're a little bit unique in that I'm not there most of the time. He is. That really helps. And but, you know, if you were going up a little bit bigger, maybe 20 to 50, and you had 4, 5, 6 partners, and, you know, at least 2 or 3 of them are located in that area, wherever the apartment building is, you probably got what you need. And this isn't to say y'all are going to manage them. I mean, in our case, we do for other reasons. But, you know, I would suggest the higher up you go, the more affordable engaging outside management companies are. You know, we happen to be – we have other units that are within 3 blocks of that one, so we, you know – can take care of the things we do on both properties at that 8 unit as well. But in any event, you know, the concept of not having to hit a grand slam just to get a single, which is kind of what the big apartment market has turned into. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. As I review these transactions for clients, I'm seeing things that just, it makes me wonder, do the syndicators just not get it? Do they not understand people haven't forgotten how you reacted the last time you had issues, meaning just here in the recent past? You know, we've got a scenario where, I mean, even right now, one of the investor/mentor platforms in the city of Houston is touting, they've got a road trip coming up. They're touting a road trip to go look at what I'm going to call a retread. The syndicator's trying to syndicate a deal for the second time. And I don't know. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, this is one that he tried capital calls on and wasn't successful. And so tried to syndicate it, and I'm not sure. I guess maybe there was some level of success, but I think it's the same transaction. And whether it is or not, the point is this syndicator already has a history of the retread, is what I call them. And, you know, I'm not saying that a retread is necessarily bad. I'm just going to tell you it usually is not good for either the group before, the original owners, or the one after, and the common denominator typically is going to be the lead partner, the syndicator. He's going to be, or he or she will be in both pools. And so you got to wonder, well, who's he representing this time? And is he, since he's already made his fees on the first go around, is he going to be putting big fees again in the second syndication? And I think the answer is yes. I haven't reviewed that transaction. I do, I believe I'll have a copy of the PPM and operating agreement here soon, but I can almost assure you that, yeah, we're going to have the same acquisition fees and capital raise fees and debt placement fees, refinance fees, if there is a refinance, disposition fee. The fees are just out of control. And by the way, how many fees got clawed back when properties went under and are going under still with these syndications? I've been saying that forever. It's like the fees are out of control. Most of these fees never existed. You couldn't find them if you back up 10 years. I'm thinking 10 years, for sure 15. They didn't exist. There was a promote. I mean, most of these syndicators are getting a promote. And for those of you that aren't aware of the language, think override. They're getting an override of 20 to 40% typically handed to them day one. They're not putting money in for that. Or if they do put money in, it's for additional ownership, which, hey, I'm all for the syndicator putting money in, but when they're charging fees that are more than the funds they're putting in, it just makes you realize, you know, who's really got skin in this game, right? And again, it's like I say, the fees in many cases of the list that I just ran it through, they're paid day zero, which is the day the transaction closes. And as the management team is walking out of closing, they got this at least acquisition fees of a couple percent, which, you know, you say, well, you know, is that really a lot of money? Well, on a $50 million transaction, which, you know, I've got clients in a multiple of those, it's $1 million. And what have they done that 10 to 15 years ago those syndicators were doing, but they weren't taking these exorbitant, egregious, is what I would call them, fees? That was deemed to be an exchange for the promote or override. Now, this average syndicator that's claiming these big fees would have you to believe that the fee or the promote is what they get for making sure the project stays on track the rest of the duration of the project. And I just, it turns my stomach to think about, you know, what they're really getting out of these transactions relative to the people, the passive investor that's actually putting their hard-earned retirement funds in. And I'm going to tell you, there are other choices. If you really think that's your only choice, okay, let's look at among the syndications that are being offered, which ones fall on the less egregious side of the page, not the worst case scenarios. But in any event, I wanted to, well, I'll tell you what, let's take our last break, and then when we come back, I was just looking at some of the large investor platforms in the private syndication space, and I wanted to just look at, just from the front home page, there's several transactions listed that just have a snapshot, and I want to just point out a few things that I see without even digging into the details that I want to make you aware of. You need to be able to look at these things, because many of you qualify to invest in these transactions. A number of you won't if you're not accredited, don't have $1 million net worth, unless some of these projects have backed off of the accreditation requirement, you won't be able to participate. But being able to review the transactions for the merits or the math metrics is pretty much identical. So to get your senses tuned to what you're looking at, I think it's a good discussion for you to hear as well. Well, let's do this. We'll take that break I mentioned. We'll circle back here momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little more.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Like the song, Bobby McGee, I'm just longing to be free. Take me away, I want to be. Big dreams and fake dreams. And there are many just like
with big dreams and faded jeans.
Big dreams.
Big dreams.
Big dreams and faded jeans.
Okay, welcome back. More of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I mentioned right before the break that when we came back, I would like to take a look at the two big platforms in the industry for real estate private partnership syndications are CrowdStreet.com and then Realty Mogul Realty Mogul. .com. And, you know, these sites have been rather barren as of late, but they are coming back out of the doldrums. And I think CrowdStreet had some legal issues that took them off the rails for a while. They had a syndicator that it's sad to say, but it does happen. And at least at this level, these two platforms do a reasonably thorough due diligence on their syndicators that participate in their program. And so in spite of that, I mean, they were lied to, and, you know, as a CPA, I'm, you know, tarred and feathered with the same brush that a CPA who's an auditor might be. And, you know, people act like, well, you know, CPAs, you know, you know audits, you understand audits. And it's like, no, I only do tax work, never done an audit in my life, don't want to do an audit in my life, wouldn't know an audit if it walked in the room, as the expression goes. And what people don't understand is, and I'm only using audits because that's an example, the same thing that happened with CrowdStreet. I mean, CrowdStreet, again, they have a thorough due diligence process, but they don't run the company, the syndicator's company. They don't do their accounting. They don't do the things that it would have taken for CrowdStreet to have been in the know on that fraud that was perpetrated on them. And if it can happen to them, I guarantee it can happen to the folks that are investing through these platforms. You know, we've got two of the big ones in the Houston area, at least two of the big ones nationally are based in Houston. And so there's a high degree of trust in these transactions. And, you know, can you call out improper pro forma information? Perhaps. If you, like us, subscribe to third party generated data where third parties have gathered, you know, various statistical analyses that, you know, the services we pay for are typically monthly, where they show you the average, well, assorted average, the average absorption rate in a given market, say Houston or Nashville, and then the submarkets. So like if I were dealing with Houston, it'd be like the Woodlands or Fort Bend County or assorted other submarkets within the Houston overall market, city of Houston. And so you can see what the average rental growth projections are. You can see what the rent per unit is. You can see how many units have been permitted that will be coming into the pipeline over the next year and a half. You can see what came into the pipeline currently. You can see how many units are in the total market that's serving that area. So, you know, again, can we call out projections that are just not realistic based on the current data that's out there? Yeah, we can. But we're assuming there's an apartment building going into the transaction. And if somebody uses the money to go take a trip to Tahiti, well, you know, that's not something that folks doing the due diligence, unless they'd done it before, would have any inkling that they needed to be prepared for. So I guess all I'm saying is you're not investing with CrowdStreet or with Realty Mogul when you invest. You're investing with a third-party sponsor or syndicator, and that's who you need to dig in on any due diligence. And, you know, check legal filings. You know, there's a system called PACER, federal filings, that will basically, they catalog every motion, every filing within a lawsuit that any U.S. court is used to adjudicate a case. And you get, the public can see that. You can pay for downloading pages if you so care to. And there's other search engines out there, you know, BenVerified.com, publicdata.com. There's a number of them. And, you know, these partnerships, the lead partners typically are not as transparent as they act like they are. And I'll give you, well, I don't want to get in at that level at this moment. I guess since we've only got a few minutes left here, I wanted to just look at the front door on Realty Mogul, and you can get an idea of what types of transactions are coming back into play. And Realty Mogul and CrowdStreet, they're doing not only multifamily, they're also doing industrial. They're doing medical facilities. They do hotels. They do a number of niches, assisted living. They've got buildings. There's one on the site right now that is mission critical. It's a two-property portfolio of mission critical facilities leased long-term to government agencies. I don't know what that is, but there's, well, I tell you, take it back. I just went down further on the screen. One is a single family. Oh no, I'm sorry. It's a 353,000 square foot outpatient care facility, for the VA. The second looks like it's a facility that immigration, USCIS, I believe that's the immigration agency or department of the government. But anyway, you can look at just the snapshot. It tells you the property type. Is it diversified? Is it residential? Let's see, what are some of the other types here? Hospitality, that must be a hotel. Yeah, it's an upscale extended stay hotel. Let's see. I can't read that one. Oh, okay. There's a multifamily. But in any event, so each one of these little snapshots that tells you what type of property it is, whether it's residential, et cetera, they tell you the estimated hold period. They give you the minimum investment. They also indicate whether it's something that can accept a 1031 exchange, or in some cases it's only 1031 exchange investment, which that's a whole nother topic. I would tell you unless you're already invested in a tenant in common type property, we call them TICs, you probably wouldn't be able to 1031 into one of these transactions. But I may be wrong. They could have structured this uniquely, and I shouldn't say, but I'll just tell you, you got to be really careful because a lot of the syndicators don't understand 1031 transactions, and they market that they're 1031 available, but they don't have any type of IRS private letter ruling or anything that would confirm it. So I'm hyper careful when I look at those types of things. In any event, this is all before you drill down and look at any of the underlying details when it comes to you know, net operating income and what their marketing plans are going to be, their management that's running the property, what else they've done in their recent past to warrant, you know, having you put your money with them. And you know, as an example, this extended stay hotel I did just drill down on. I know I said I wasn't going to, but I thought, hey, let's take a look at how many units this thing is and you know, what it's going for, how much they're raising, if I can see that without going down another level. But in any event, it's a 10 minutes from the Jersey Shore, 114 room property featuring indoor pool, fitness center, meeting rooms, business center, fire pit, outdoor sports court, and complimentary hot breakfast. The property is owned and managed by Peachtree Group, a hospitality-focused sponsor who has made 700-plus investments worth $11.7 billion. So that is a sizable organization. I mean, you should have at least some feel that, hey, this is not mom and pop that I met at an investment club last month, you know, doing a presentation. And I'm not going to knock those. That's where I started my journey, was going to an event like that. I joined that organization and provided, not only I provided capital for investing that I earned, I also was a vendor in their vendor group, first vendor, in fact, and worked with many of the other partnerships, providing assorted partnership agreement services, et cetera. But in any event, an $11.7 billion organization, that is truly going to be a passive investment. You will not be involved. You won't be assisting or otherwise having to help, you know, find investors or lenders or tenants or anything, or guests in this case. So anyway, but that's just one example. We don't have time. We got 1 minute left, not even a minute. So we're going to wrap up now. We'll do more of this in ensuing weeks. Used to do it a lot. We're going to try to get back on track now that we've got some projects to discuss. We hope you enjoyed the show today, and you can join us again on Sunday, 7 a.m. for our cyber version of the Be a Planner show. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.